Okay, good to see everybody back, and look forward to seeing everybody over Shavuos, those who are going to be staying in. We left off on Beis Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of Tosfos v'Ashkelon. Just to quickly recap outside, and then we'll finish up just a couple more points within the Tosfos. The Mishnah had said that with regard to the requirement that a shliach who brings a get from chutz la'aretz must say b'fana nechtav and b'fana nechtam, so the Mishnah said that Ashkelon and Rechem and Cheger and Ashkelon, Rechem and Akko, to be exact, Ashkelon, Rechem and Akko are all considered like chutz la'aretz with regard to this halacha of saying b'fana nechtav and b'fana nechtam. And Tosfos questioned, how could Ashkelon be considered like chutz la'aretz? Psukim seem to indicate that Ashkelon is considered like Eretz Yisrael. And Tosfos responded, well, maybe Ashkelon wasn't conquered again by Ezra HaSofer and the Ole Bavel. Tosfos questioned, how could Rechem and Chega be considered like Chutz La'aretz? Psukim seem to indicate, or this, and the Sifra seems to indicate that it's considered part of Eretz Yisrael. And with regard to that, Tosfos answered, well, there's two different Rechems, two different Chegers. And then finally, Tosfos asked about Akko. How could Akko be considered like Chutz La'aretz? If again, we find Gemaras that seem to indicate that Akko is part of Eretz Yisrael. So we had seen Rabbeinu Tam's answer that, well, there's two halves to Akko. And one half of Akko is considered Eretz Yisrael, one half of Akko, the outer half, is considered Chutz La'aretz. And we mentioned my grandfather, based on the Rabbeinu Tam as cited in Sefer HaYashar, explained a little more in detail that what Rabbeinu Tam means when he says that there are two halves of Akko, one is part of Eretz Yisrael, one is part of Chutz La'aretz, is that the half of Akko that is closer to Eretz Yisrael is completely like Eretz Yisrael, both with regard to what we called Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, that it was conquered not just by Yehoshua, but it was conquered by Ezra HaSofer, and all the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz are relevant in this half of Akko as well. In the second half of Akko, we saw in Sefer Yashar of Rabbeinu Tam, only has Shem Eretz Yisrael, not Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, which means that it was conquered the first time around by Yehoshua, but not the second time around by Ezra HaSofer. And therefore, the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz would not necessarily be relevant in the second half of Akko, and in some ways it's considered like Chutz La'aretz. Okay, that was how we explained last time the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, based on how he is quoted in Sefer Yashar. So today let's just finish up with that same idea with regard to the Ri. Because if we look at the Shita of the Ri, let's take a look. The Ri had difficulty with Rabbeinu Tam's approach, so about 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom of that Tosfos. The Omar Ri. The Ri says slightly differently than Rabbeinu Tam. The Ri says, "Da'afilu bitzad shel Eretz Yisrael, sarach lomar b'fanai nichtav v'chule." The Ri says that our Mishnah, which requires a shliach coming from Akko with a get to say b'fana nechtav and b'fana nechtam, is speaking even about that half of Akko that is considered part of Eretz Yisrael. Meaning the Ri agrees with the Rabbeinu Tam's underlying assumption that there are two halves of Akko. One half is Chutz La'aretz, one half is Eretz Yisrael. But whereas Rabbeinu Tam said that our Mishnah, which treats Akko like Chutz La'aretz, is talking about the Chutz La'aretz half of Akko, the Ri says that no, that yes, Rabbeinu Tam, you're right, there are two halves of Akko, one half is Eretz Yisrael, one half is Chutz La'aretz, but our Mishnah, which requires b'fana nechtav from a shliach who's coming from Akko, is speaking even about the half of Akko that is where? In Eretz Yisrael. Why? What's the svar to require the fana nichtav if the get is being brought from the half of akko that is in Eretz Yisrael? So Tosa says lefishu besof hagvul, because that akko is is at the very edge of Israel's territory. Virachok meikur yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's very distant from the main population centers of Eretz Yisrael. Umuflog min hayeshivos ubatei dinim, and therefore it is far away from the yeshivos and from the batei din, and therefore the concerns that we have with regard to a get coming from chutz la'aretz, that it might be written by people who don't know the halachos of lishma, or that maybe you won't easily find witnesses who recognize the signatures on this get, is just as relevant with regard to a get coming from Akko. The same problems arise with the get coming from Akko, because it's far away from Beis Din, so we're not going to have people who easily recognize the signatures on this get. And it's far away from the yeshivos, people that might not know the halachas of lishma so well. So therefore, the Ri says, our Mishnah will require b'fana nechtav, and b'fana nechtav, even with regard to a get that comes from the Eretz Yisrael half of Akko. Then the Ri adds, v'chein yesh letaretz gabi Ashkelon, v'gabi Rekem v'cheger. The same answer can be given with regard to Ashkelon and Rekem and Cheger. We had asked in Tosis earlier, Ashkelon, Rekem and Cheger. Psukim seems to indicate they're part of Eretz Yisrael, not part of Chutz La'aretz. So he says, one fell swoop, yeah, they're all part of Eretz Yisrael, just like Akko. But still, we treat it like chutz la'aretz with regard to the writing and the bringing of a get, because it's so far out from the main population centers of Israel, from the yeshivas and the batei din, that the same concerns we have with regard to chutz la'aretz, we have with regard to Ashkelon and Rekem v'Cheger and Akko as well. Okay, the Ri then adds, v'hashto parich shaper. Now we understand the Gemara later on Daf Vav, when the Gemara asks, the Gemara there said that a shliach brought a get. Turn to Daf Vav very briefly, Vav Mem Beis. Top of Vav Mem Beis. The Gemara said over there that a shliach brought a get from Kfar Sisoi, and Rabbi Shmuel paskins that if you're coming from Kfar Sisoi, you must say b'fana nechtav and b'fana nechtam. And the Gemara then asks, how can that be? Kfar Sisoi is surrounded on three sides by Eretz Yisrael. It's closer to Sipori, a major city in Eretz Yisrael, even closer than Akko. And if the Mishnah says that Akko, according to some opinions, is like Eretz Yisrael, the Mishnah says, Rav Meir holds that Akko is k'Eretz Yisrael, and even the Rabbanon who say that Akko is k'chutz la'aretz, that's only because Akko is so far out. But Kfar Sisoi, which is much closer, it should be considered like Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, Akko is far out, that's Chutz La'aretz with regard to get, according to Chachamim. But Kfar Sisoi, which is so close, should be considered like Eretz Yisrael. So the Ri says, why are we comparing Kfar Sisoi to Akko? So the Ri says, Hashta Parach Shapir, Kfar Sisoi dekarov l'tzipori. The Gemara is asking that Kfar Sisoi, which is much closer to Tzipori than Akko, Shehaiser Yikr Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Tzipori is a major population center in Israel. Tfeme Akko, it's closer to Kfar Sisoi is close to Tzipori more than Akko is. Derachok Meikr Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which is far out. Akko is far out from the major population center in Israel. So Afagav de Akko hi Atzma ve'Eretz Yisrael. Even though Akko is Eretz Yisrael, Kfar Sisoi is Chutz La'aretz. Mikomakom, nevertheless, Pashit Shaper, the Gemara still says that Kfar Sisoi should be better than Akko. Kevan dekimle, because we've already established Dimuv La'as Mahani, Ki'ilu Himamish me'Eretz Yisrael, that a city surrounded on three sides is treated like Eretz Yisrael. Kirabban Gamliel, like the opinion of Rabban Gamliel in the Mishnah. De Omar, who says, Muvla'os Shchichi Ugamiri, that cities that are absorbed, swallowed, or surrounded on three sides by Eretz Yisrael territory, witnesses travel back and forth very frequently, and they are learned enough in the halachos of Lishma. What the Ri is saying here is the following, that our Mishnah, which says that Akko is treated like Chutz La'aretz with regard to reciting B'fana Nechtav and B'fana Nechtam, is talking even about the part of Akko that's in Eretz Yisrael. Which means, says the Ri, what's critical in this halacha of B'fana Nechtav is not Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz. What's critical is, how far is it from the major yishuv of Eretz Yisrael? You can have an Akko, which is technically Eretz Yisrael, but if it's far out, it's far from the Batei Din, it's far from the yeshivos, then the concerns of Chutz La'aretz, with regard to get writing apply to Akko also. And that's why on the flip side, says the Ri, the Gemara in Daf Vav, with regard to Kfar Sisoi, will say, even if Kfar Sisoi is Chutzlarts, doesn't matter. The fact that it's so close to Tzipori, so close to the Yeshivos and the Batei Din of Eretz Yisrael, would therefore mean that it's treated like Eretz Yisrael with regard to B'fana Nechtav and B'fana Nechtam. So the Ri says, it's not Eretz Yisrael versus Chutzlarts, it's how close are you to the Yeshivos and the Batei Din in Eretz Yisrael, which will determine whether you say B'fana Nechtav or B'fana Nechtam when bringing a get written in a certain location. Because that's how the Ri disagrees with Ben Atam. The bottom line is, both Ri and Ben Atam agree that Akko is half Eretz Yisrael, half Chutzlarts. The difference is that according to Ben Atam, B'fana Nechtav is only said when you're bringing a get from the Chutzlarts, half of Akko. Whereas according to the Ri, B'fana Nechtav is said even when bringing a get from the Eretz Yisrael side of Akko, because he says the critical issue is not Eretz Yisrael versus Chutzlarts, but the critical issue is close to Yeshivos and Batei Din or far off from Yeshivos and Batei Din. Okay, now here's the last part of the Tosfos which we're going to discuss briefly. Interesting, and perhaps at first perplexing comment of the Ri. The Tosfos then asks, Vim Tomar de Omer bi Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, Hamocher avdo le'ako yotza l'cheirus. If somebody sells an eved to Akko, he goes free. We mentioned last time that the halacha is that if somebody sells an eved Kanani to Chutz La'aretz, so we penalize the person who sold his eved, we force him to buy him back and to set him free. You're not allowed to sell your eved to Chutz La'aretz. Yeah.
Just to go back, just to read the Rabbeinu Tam, but doesn't the Rabbeinu Tam, beginning of the Tosfos, doesn't he seem to say that he still needs the idea that he has to be part of the Yeshuv, because when he's discussing Ashkelon,
right.
So, I mean, it seems like he's still, I mean, at a certain level, it seems like he's, I mean, he would have to hold, like, the Ri, I mean,
true, but Tom said by Ashkelon that Ashkelon was conquered the first time around, not the second time around.
But then he,
and he said that because it wasn't conquered the second time around, that's why there are no Talmidei Chachamim there, there's no Batei Din there. So he's working with the same idea that the halacha is impacted by whether there are Talmidei Chachamim and Batei Din in the location you're talking about, but he seems to connect it to the fact that it wasn't conquered by Olei Bava the second time around.
So he would need both criteria?
According to Ben Atam, that seems to be the way, yeah. Now, the Ri hasn't said anything about that Olei Bavel Kibush as of yet. And perhaps explicitly does not do so at all. We'll have to get to that.
Yeah. When we read the Mishnah, we said the reason that you have to swear is, we gave multiple reasons. One of them was, if it's from, you know, if it's outside of Eretz Yisrael, we're worried that they're not enough Talmid Chachamim. That's
right.
The opinion that we hold by here. The other one was that the person was divorcing his wife might change his mind? Was that one?
Well, that's why we were concerned he might come and claim the get was a forgery. But the real the second reason was is that we're worried maybe the husband will come and claim that the witnesses on the get were forged.
I guess then this logic would still work, that the distance...
I'm sorry?
Then, you know, what Rabbeinu Tam is saying, that it's the distance that counts.
So what counts in that regard is if the husband claims the get's witnesses are forged, then the get would only be valid if you can bring in two more witnesses who recognize the signatures on this get, who can authenticate the signatures in the get. So when we say here in Tosfos that a certain location is far from Batei Din, what that means is therefore you're not likely to find witnesses who recognize these signatures, because when you're in a city where there's Beis Din will often be authenticating signatures by witnesses on a document. So you'll probably find people who recognize these signatures, or Beis Din will have a record of these signatures. But if you're in a place where there's no Beis Din around, so it's going to be much harder to find people to recognize, or find a Beis Din to recognize the signatures on a get. The way you can authenticate a signature on a get or on a document is either by bringing in the witnesses themselves, who will say, yes, we signed this document, or by bringing in two other people who can say, yes, we recognize the signatures on this get, or on this document, or you can go to Beis Din, and Beis Din will pull out a previously authenticated document where the signatures match the ones on this document. So in any of those ways, you can authenticate signatures on a document. But if there's no beis din around, then it's going to be much harder to do that.
Because Rabbeinu Tam works also with the...
Right, correct, with both reasons, right. Right. Okay, so the Yerushalmi says that if somebody sells an Eved to Akko, the Eved goes free. Implying what? Akko's Chutzlaretz, right. Then the Yerushalmi quotes the father of Rabbi Yudin, who says, no, afilo me Akko la Akko. Even if you sell an Eved from one half of Akko to the other, the Eved goes free. Implying what?
One part of Akko to the other part of Akko?
Yeah.
It's a
what?
Eretz,
right, implying, well, half of Akko is Eretz Yisrael, half of Akko is Chutz La'aretz. So if you sell an Eved from the Eretz Yisrael half to the Chutz La'aretz half, it'll go free. Okay, so Tosis asks the following question. Tosis then asks, one second here. Those two statements in the Yerushalmi don't seem to work too well together. Why? He says, "V'kevan da'afilu be'osod sad she'be'eretz Yisrael yotze l'cheiros." If the Yerushalmi initially says that when I sell my Eved from Eretz Yisrael to the half of Akko, which is the Eretz Yisrael half, the Eved goes free. Im kein me'Akko la'Akko amay yotze l'cheiros. Then why would the Eved go free when sold from the first half of Akko to the second half of Akko? Kevan dechashiv kechutz la'aretz. If the first half of Akko is also considered chutz la'aretz, then from half of Akko to other half of Akko, why should he go free? I mean, Tosfos sees two statements in Yerushalmi. The first statement in Yerushalmi says, if you sell an Eved from Eretz Yisrael to anywhere in Akko, presumably, the Eved goes free. Implying what? That anywhere in Akko was what? It was chutz la'aretz. Then comes the second line in Yerushalmi and says, if you sell your Eved from the first half of Akko to the second half of Akko, he also goes free. Implying what? That the southern half of Akko is Eretz Yisrael, northern half of Akko is Chutz La'aretz, and that's why from Akko to Akko goes free. So Tosfos asks, well, the two statements are not consistent with each other. If you consider the lower half of Akko to be Eretz Yisrael, and that's why if I sell my Eved from one half to the other half, the Eved goes free, then the first statement of the Yerushalmi doesn't work. Selling my Eved from Eretz Yisrael to any part of Akko is not necessarily going to set him free. If I consider the southern half of Akko to be Eretz Yisrael, then why when I sell him from Eretz Yisrael to that half of Akko does he go free?
How do we know the first statement is talking about any part of Akko?
Probably because it doesn't specify. Just as generally, sell an Eved from Eretz Yisrael to Akko, it goes free.
Before Gemara said Akko, we were able to say, oh no, we're talking about that part of Akko.
That's because the Yerushalmi splits Akko in half. But within that Yerushalmi that splits Akko in half, right? The second half, one statement in the Yerushalmi distinguishes between one half of Akko and the other half of Akko. The very previous line in the Yerushalmi makes no distinction, implying that there's no distinction in the first statement of the Yerushalmi. So the question is, how does that work? So look how the Ri explains it. The Ri says, V'yesh lomar, Dinehi dechashev kechutzo la'aretz, Ligabe ikur yishuv Eretz Yisrael, granted that lower half of Akko is considered like chutz la'aretz, relative to the major or the more settled parts of Eretz Yisrael. However, Ligabe chutzo la'aretz, with regard to chutzo la'aretz, Miachashev ke'Eretz Yisrael, it's considered like Eretz Yisrael. So what's the Ri saying, Pshat, is in the Yerushalmi?
There are three levels.
Three levels. There's Eretz Yisrael, and then there is the lower half of Akko, which in relation to Eretz Yisrael is considered what?
A
Chutz La'aretz. But then there's the upper half of Akko, which in relation to the lower half of Akko is even more Chutz La'aretz. How does that work? He's saying the three levels, right? There's Eretz Yisrael proper, and the lower half of Akko, which is less than that. So if you sell your Eved from Eretz Yisrael to Akko, he goes free. But then, if I sell my Eved from Akko to Akko, he also goes free. Why? Because the upper half of Akko is even less than the lower half of Akko. Is that what he's saying here? Right? He's saying that middle half of Akko is Chutz La'aretz with regard to Eretz Yisrael, but it's Eretz Yisrael with regard to the rest of Akko. And with regards to the rest of Chutz La'aretz.
So we said Akko, the second part of Akko, was not conquered by Ezra on purpose.
Hold on. Is the question clear first? Hold on. Question clear? What's the Ri saying?
And you're allowed to bring your Eved there yourself. Otherwise, you'd have no Eved in either part of Rachel.
I guess if you bought an Eved there, it's okay. You can buy an Eved there. What we're saying now is that if I sell my Eved from Eretz Yisrael to the lower half of Akko, he goes free.
He'll go free.
But if I sell my Eved from lower half of Akko to upper half of Akko, he goes free. Right? So the question is, how does that make sense? So the reason, so we're saying there's three levels. There's Eretz Yisrael, there's lower half of Akko, and there's upper half of Akko. And in relation to each other, it's like a... It's being downgraded. Each stage is going down. What?
Descending.
Right, in descending order, right. In descending order, you're going down from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. So the question is, how does that work? That's the question. Yes, what were you saying, Alex?
So last time we spoke about, you know, the different conquests. It was the first one that
right.
Hashem ordered to conquer.
So right.
I remember Akko, we mentioned when Ezra came back, you know, when the Jews came back from Babylon, he on purpose did not conquer
half of Akko.
Right.
Quarter minute time.
So that's
right.
The one that's considered completely Chutz Laretz. Uh-huh. So the first part that he did conquer, when was it conquered the first time? Was it David the
Melech? So according to Ben Atam, the half of Akka that was reconquered by Ezra was, the first time round was conquered by Yehoshua and was promised to the Jews by HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Oh, so it is part of the original one?
Yeah.
I was hoping it was...
I'm trying to find three levels here.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, I hear that. Okay, so my grandfather, along those lines, explained Pshat in the Ri as follows. Using the same Yesodos we had last time of Kedusha Aseret Yisrael as being indicative of something which was conquered by Yehoshua and by Ezra, and that's completely Eretz Yisrael. And Shem Eretz Yisrael refers to those parts that were conquered only by Yehoshua, not by Ezra, and that's this in-between stage between what? Eretz and Chutz Laretz. It's Eretz Yisrael with regard to some mitzvos, but not all, and it's Chutz Laretz with regard to other mitzvos. So he said, perhaps the Ri views Akko as follows. Rabbeinu Tam, we said, splits Akko by saying that one half of Akko is completely Eretz Yisrael, it's Kedushas Eretz Yisrael and Shem Eretz Yisrael, and the other half of Akko is only Shem Eretz Yisrael. That was Rabbeinu Tam. So my grandfather suggested the Ri disagrees with the Ben Otam as to how to understand the split of Akko. And he says the following. He says the lower half of Akko that's closer to Eretz Yisrael was only conquered by Yehoshua, only has Shem Eretz Yisrael. The upper half of Akko, which is closer to Chutz Laretz, was not conquered by anyone ever whatsoever. And it therefore has neither Kedushas Eretz Yisrael nor Shem Eretz Yisrael, it's completely Chutz Laretz. Meaning, the Ri might hold that the lower half of Akko only has Shem Eretz Yisrael, the upper half of Akko is completely Chutz Laretz. So what are my three levels now? My three levels are what? Eretz Yisrael proper is what? Both Shem Eretz Yisrael and Kedushas Eretz Yisrael is conquered by Yehoshua and by Ezra. The lower half of Akko is downgraded a step in that what? It's only conquered by Yehoshua, not by Ezra. Only has Shem Eretz Yisrael, not Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. The upper half of Akko is downgraded even a step further in that what? It has nothing. It was never conquered at all by anybody. No Shem Eretz Yisrael, no Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. It's completely Chutz Laretz. So now, how do we explain the halachas of the Yerushalmi? Again, that's our bottom line. The question is, the Yerushalmi said, if I sell my Eved from Eretz Yisrael to Akko, he goes free. From Akko to Akko, he also goes free. So how does that work? That means, according to this understanding of the Ri, if I sell my Eved from a place that has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael to a place that has only Shem Eretz Yisrael, he goes free. And if I sell an Eved from a place that has only Shem Eretz Yisrael to a place that has nothing, he also goes free. So the question still remains, why is that? You know, what is the critical determining factor of Chutz Laretz with regard to an Eved? Is it Kedushas Eretz Yisrael? Is it Shem Eretz Yisrael? Whichever one it is, you can't have it both ways, you would think. Meaning, if you tell me that what determines Chutz Laretz for an Eved is lack of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, then I understand that when I sell him from Eretz Yisrael to Akko, he goes free. But from Akko to Akko, there never was Kedushas Eretz Yisrael to begin with. So why is he going free then? And if you tell me what determines chutzlarts with regard to an eved is the lack of shame Eretz Yisrael, then why does the eved go free when being sold from Eretz Yisrael to the first half of Akko? What's the critical determining factor of chutzlarts with regard to selling an eved? That's the question we still have to answer. Okay? So my grandfather suggested the following. He said, what is the reason in the Rishonim why altogether, if you sell an eved from Eretz Yisrael to chutzlarts, he goes free? What's the reason for it? So it's machlokas in the Rishonim. Rashi on Daf Chesam Aleph says the following. Rashi Daf Chesam Aleph, it's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines up in the bottom of the page in Rashi, Chesam Aleph. Beginning of the line. Kemocher b'chutz la'aretz. That if somebody sells an eved, the Gemara here was talking about somebody who sells an eved to Surya, it's like he's selling him to Chutz La'aretz. So Rashi says, what's that halacha? Utsnam l'kamon, the Mishnah says later on, Daf Mem Gimel, Hamocher avdo l'chutz la'aretz, if somebody sells an eved to Chutz La'aretz, yotza l'cheiros, he goes free. D'konsinan l'lokeach, we penalize, Rashi says the lokeach, we penalize the person who purchased the eved. Mishum, the eved shayach b'mitzvos, because an eved Kenani is also obligated in mitzvos, like a Jewish woman is. V'aser lotzeis me'eretz l'chutz la'aretz. And there is a prohibition to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz. So according to Rashi, what's the reason why if somebody sells an eved Kenani to Chutz La'aretz, the eved goes free? It's a penalty that we impose on the person who purchased the eved, because by purchasing this eved, you forced him to violate an isser of leaving Eretz Yisrael. And this eved Kenani is obligated in a mitzvah like a Jewish woman is, and you force him to violate an isser, we penalize you, he goes free.
Why the purchaser only?
I guess the purchaser is Jewish, I guess.
So why not the seller, though?
Is
that a purchaser who wouldn't have sold?
Good question. According to Rashi, would the seller, purchaser be able to go to the seller and claim the money back from him? Good question. I'm not sure of a fan. I don't know. Good question. Rashi is stressing the purchaser. It's a good ha'ara. But according to Rashi, the critical issue is that you've caused him to violate an issur of leaving Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. Look on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis in the Tosis Harid there on the side of the Gemara. On the Mishnah, which is the source for this halacha. Rashi tells us it's a discussion in the Gemara if we penalize the buyer or penalize the seller. So the Tosis Rid says, that's six lines up in the bottom of the Tosis Rid in the margin. Tosis Rid says, Inami, another explanation as to why the Eved goes free after being sold is because he says kishemachruhu l'chutz la'aretz, when the eved kani is sold to chutz la'aretz, hifkio mi mitzvos hanohagos be'eretz Yisrael, you have now prevented him from performing those mitzvos that are relevant only in Eretz Yisrael. V'fichach, therefore konsim osom sheyetze l'cheres, we penalize you to allow the eved to go free. So according to Tosfos, the real critical issue is what? Not that he violated an isser of going to Chutz La'aretz, but that you now have prevented him from doing those mitzvahs that only apply in Eretz Yisrael, Shemitah, Shemus and Maestros, and the like. So there are two reasons so far we've seen in the Rishonim as to why when an Eved Kenani is sold to Chutz La'aretz, he goes free. Either because you forced him to violate an isser of going from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, or because you have now withheld from him the ability to fulfill the mitzvahs that are only relevant where in Eretz Yisrael. So my grandfather suggested the following. He said, mitzvahs that are relevant only in Eretz Yisrael, such as Shemus and Maestros and Shemitah, what is that dependent on? We said last time, we saw in the Radvaz in Hilchos Sanhedrin, that those mitzvahs are dependent on Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Right? We said the Gemara in Chulin said that the reason why Ezra HaSofer deliberately did not conquer or reconquer some parts of Eretz Yisrael was because he wanted those parts of Eretz Yisrael to be free from Shemitah and free from Trumas and Maestros to make it easier for Aniyim. Implying very clearly that those mitzvahs of Luis Baritz, Shemitah, Trumas and Maestros are only relevant in a place that has Kedusha Eretz Yisrael and Kibush Olei Bavel. So according to Tosfos Rid then, if the reason why an Eved goes free when sold to Chutz Laaretz is because you've prevented him from now doing mitzvahs of Shemitah and Trumas and Maestros, etc., that means that he goes free whenever you sell him to a place that what? You sell him from a place that had Kedusha Eretz Yisrael and had Shemitah and had Trumas and Maestros to a place that no longer has Kedusha Eretz Yisrael and no longer has Shemitah and Trumas and Maestros. So according to Tosfos Rid, I understand very well, according to the way we've explained the Ri, that when I sell an Eved from Eretz Yisrael proper to the lower half of Akko, I've sold him from a place that has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael to a place that has only Shem Eretz Yisrael. I have now prevented him from doing any more of the mitzvahs of Shemitah and Trumas and Maestros. He goes free. According to Rashi, though, that the Isser, that the reason why you free an Eved who is sold to Chutz Laaretz is because what? Rashi Daf Ches says, because why? Because there's an Isser of leaving Eretz Yisrael. So the question then becomes, well, what is that Isser dependent on? When do I fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? When do I no longer have the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? So the Radvaz that we had seen in Hilchos Sanhedrin, in Perek Dalet Halacha Vav of Hilchos Sanhedrin, the Radvaz there said that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is dependent, much like the halacha of only giving smicha in Eretz Yisrael, it's dependent on Shem Eretz Yisrael. So if that's the case, then according to Rashi, when would I be forced to free an Eved Kanani that I sold to Chutz Laaretz? Only if I sold him to a place that no longer has Shem Eretz Yisrael. But if the place that he sold to still has Shem Eretz Yisrael, who had Kibush of Olei Mitzrayim, it had Kibush of Yehoshua, albeit not Kibush of Olei Babel, I would not have to free my Eved because he's still living in a place where there is a Kiyum mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So my grandfather suggested that the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos Rid would have that nafkamina. If I sell an Eved from a place that to a place that no longer has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael but still has Shem Eretz Yisrael, according to Tosfos Rid, the Eved would go free because there's no longer any Shemitah or Trumas or Maestros. According to Rashi, he wouldn't go free because he still is in a place with his Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Conversely, if I sold an Eved from a place where there was only Shem Eretz Yisrael to a place where there's nothing, again an Afkamina. According to Tosfos Rid, nothing changed. He never had Shemitah and Trumas and Maestros, still doesn't. According to Rashi, he goes free because he had been in a place with his Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, he no longer is. Okay? So my grandfather then said, perhaps the Ri in our Tosfos is working with both opinions. Perhaps he holds that both are valid reasons as to why an Eved Kanani who sold to Chutz Laaretz goes free. And therefore, the Ri says, what's pshat in the Yerushalmi, that when I sell an Eved from Eretz Yisrael to one half of Akko, the Eved goes free. Because that half of Akko is considered like Chutz Laaretz with regard to Eretz Yisrael. And if I sell an Eved from that first half of Akko to a second half of Akko, he also goes free. Because that first half of Akko, although it's Chutz Laaretz with regard to Eretz Yisrael, but it's considered like Eretz Yisrael with regard to Chutz Laaretz, how does that make sense? So my grandfather suggested the pshat is as follows. If the Ri holds, like both the reason of Tosfos Rid and the reason of Rashi, in explaining why an Eved who sold to Chutz Laaretz goes free, so pshat Nishami is this. When I sell an Eved from Eretz Yisrael, which has both Shem Eretz Yisrael and Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, to the first half of Akko, which according to the Ri, has only Shem Eretz Yisrael, the Eved would go free according to which reason? From Kedushas Eretz Yisrael to Shem Eretz Yisrael, he would go free according to Tosfos Rid's pshat that you no longer have the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz of Shemitah and Trumas and Maestros. And yet, if I sell him from that first half of Akko, which only has Shem Eretz Yisrael, to the second half of Akko, which has nothing, it's complete Chutz Laaretz, he would also go free according to the other reason that what?
Living in Israel.
That he's now been forced to leave Eretz Yisrael to a place where there's no longer a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The reason of Rashi. From a place of Shem Eretz Yisrael to a place of nothing. And that's why he would go free there as well. So my grandfather's shot was that according to the Ri, if you assume that one half of Akko has only Shem Eretz Yisrael, the second half of Akko has nothing, not Shem or Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, then you can understand why selling an Eved from Eretz Yisrael to Akko and from Akko to Akko would go free in both cases according to one of the two reasons we saw on the Rishonim, which perhaps the Ri is assuming both of, Rashi and Tosis Rit.
According to that, if someone lived in Akko, moved to Israel, and then is moving back with his Eved, selling the Eved to Akko, the Eved will go free.
Well, if you moved from where?
You go from Akko to Israel, and then you sell the Eved to Akko, the Eved will go free.
And if you brought your Eved with you from Akko?
Yeah, and then you sell him.
So I wonder, if somebody brings an Eved from Akko to Israel, does that make any difference?
No,
I guess so. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you're right. Maybe once he has the privilege of living in Israel, then he goes free if you sell him back out. Maybe you could say, no, since I only bought him when I was in Chutzlaritz, so he's never seemed to have those privileges.
Shouldn't matter according to either reason.
What?
Shouldn't matter. That shouldn't be the case with either reason, though. So once he's in Israel, he has
the Mitzvah. The Israel, Rosh, right.
He has a Mitzvah Yeshua.
Shouldn't matter either way.
Mitzvah.
Right, shouldn't matter either way. Okay. Right.
I just have a quick question on the grandfather's chat. Is it matter that the Ri would switch reasons going from one to the other? It wouldn't work with the same reason the whole time?
So there's no, I mean, we don't know what the Ri holds as far as the reason for why an Eved Kanani who sold Kulsarts goes free. But based on his shot here in the Yerushalmi, that an Eved will go free when sold from Eretz Yisrael to Akko and from Akko to Akko.
Right.
Because he says that lower half of Akko is considered like Kulsarts with regard to Eretz Yisrael. That's considered like Eretz Yisrael with regard to Chutz La'aretz. So you have to somehow explain that there's this descending, order of status, which would help explain why he goes free in all cases. And the only way you could possibly understand that is if you assume that he's working with both of the reasons.
Yeah.
With both, right. Which Svar is not difficult, meaning perhaps he holds that there are two reasons why an Eved goes free. In some cases, both reasons are relevant. In some cases, only one reason is relevant.
But if Eretz Kanani goes free, he no longer has to deal with mitzvah, so he keeps...
When I'm Meshachar in Eretz Kanani, then he becomes a full-fledged Jew.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So that, with that, we conclude that idea of my grandfather, Shem Eretz Yisrael, Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, and we'll conclude our discussion of that Tosas. I just wanted to start, literally just to start, the next Tosas, also a sizable one, but the entire Tosas really focuses on one issue, and Tosas just debates it back and forth. And the issue is the following. The very last line in the Mishnah said that if a shliach brings a get that was written in Eretz Yisrael, so there's no need to say b'fana nichtav and b'fana nechtav. We assume it was written l'shma. Even if the husband shows up and claims the witnesses are forgeries, we can always find authentication, from people who recognize these signatures from Eretz Yisrael. We're not worried about the get being declared a forgery. So you can use the get right away. What happens, says the Mishnah, if a get is brought by a shliach from Eretz Yisrael, and the shliach was not required, as the Mishnah states, to say b'fana nichtav, b'fana nechtam, and in fact, some time later, the husband does show up and claim, this get is a fake, it's a forgery, it's a fraud, I never wrote it, these witnesses are all made up, what do you do then? So the Mishnah says, no problem, yiskayim b'chosamav. If the husband in fact shows up and claims it gets a forgery, so then you'll have to be mekayim the get, meaning you'll have to bring in witnesses who recognize the signatures on the get, or bring in the witnesses themselves who signed the get, to claim that these witnesses are real, the signatures are authentic. Okay? Tosa says the following. Aval kolzman delo osi balu ma'arer. But so long as the husband does not show up and claim the get is a fake, niseis api haget. The implication of the Mishnah is that the woman can take this get and run with it to her next chuppah. Not a problem.
But he doesn't have to have aiding. He can just stay on his own. As
a I'm sorry?
He doesn't need aiding or anything.
When he comes to complain. Right. But the Matos says the implication of the Mishnah is that if he has not yet complained, we're not going to worry that he will. Shliach brings a get from Eretz Yisrael, signed by two Adam, delivers it to the woman, she's allowed to go get married with it. Not a problem. Velo taininan mezuyof. And Beisdin will not on their own suggest that, well, perhaps this get is a forgery, prove that it's not. They won't prevent it from getting married, in other words, with this get. Why? In the interests of preventing her from remaining in Aguna, we don't want to place any unnecessary obstacles in the path of this woman when she's trying to get remarried. We accept the get as is. We don't worry about the fact that maybe it was forged. We let her get remarried.
This is in a case of Panayetha.
The case is where Shliach brings a get from that was written in Eretz Yisrael. So he did not. No, a Shliach Laholacha brings a get that was written in Eretz Yisrael. He does not say b'fana nechtam. He just gives her the get and based it. And based in allows her to get remarried on the basis of this get. Okay? Tosis then says, and this is the critical issue, which Tosis then discusses back and forth for the remainder of the Tosis. Aval b'mamon, but when it comes to monetary documents, tainin and mezuyof, Beisdin will claim that the document is forged. In what situation? Lenifra shalobafana. If somebody tries to collect payment in absentia, meaning when the defendant is not present, umi yisomim, or if somebody tries to collect payment from orphans who don't know enough to be able to say, you know, it's a forgery, it's not a forgery. Or when somebody tries to collect payment from someone who purchased property from a person that I claim owes me money. Meaning, if I walk into Beisdin with a document claiming that my neighbor owes me money, my neighbor's out of town. So Tosa says, Beisdin's not going to say, oh, you have a document signed by witnesses, he owes you money, great, go take his car. No, Beisdin will claim, prove the document is valid, prove the witnesses are valid. If I walk into Beisdin with a document saying that so-and-so, who has since been deceased, owes me $1,000, and I want to collect it from the property he left to his orphans, Beisdin also will not say, oh, great, go take the guy's car. They'll say, no, first prove that the witnesses signed here are authentic. Or a third case where somebody might not have the ability to defend himself. I walk into Beisdin and I say, so-and-so borrowed money from me. Here's my document, loan document to prove it. Sign my witnesses. And since he doesn't have the assets to repay me, I want to go and seize the house that he sold recently to this unsuspecting investor. I want to seize that house. So they're also based, they'll say, no, you've got to prove the document, loan document is valid first. Why, says Tosfos? Dim lo kein, because if you don't say that, lo shavkis chaya l'chaberia. You're not going to let people live. So yuchal kol adam lichtov shtar milveh. Any guy can go and write up his own promissory notes. Ulahachtim edem me'atzmo, and sign so-called witnesses on it by himself. The litrov, and then to go and collect shelo b'fanov in the guy's absence. Umi yisomim, or from orphans. Umi lekuchos, or from unsuspecting purchasers. Okay, so Tosis here, this is all see Tosis today, Tosis here suggests that there's a basic distinction between a get that's brought into Beisdin, signed by witnesses whom we don't recognize, and a loan document brought into Beisdin, signed by witnesses who we don't recognize. That's a pretty basic issue here. Tosis says, if somebody brings a get that was written in Eretz Yisrael into Beisdin as a shliach, signed by witnesses that we don't recognize, the get is valid. But if somebody walks into Beis Din with a loan document claiming that someone owes me money, and that someone is not here to defend himself, he's out of town, or he's dead and I'm collecting from his orphans, or this someone, or I want to seize assets that this somebody sold to somebody else who doesn't know really what happened in the loan at all, then Tosis suggests Beis Din will in fact claim, say to the guy, you have no right to collect on the basis of this loan document until you bring in proof that the witnesses signed here are authentic. And that, says Tosis, is simply because otherwise, you know, civilization wouldn't function. Just, it would be a madhouse, it would be a mess. It wouldn't work. Okay? Basic shaila, and that's how Tosis opens up. Okay, and the rest of Tosis, which we'll see next time, is a back and forth on that issue. But what's interesting to look at here is the Ramban on Daf Tes Amud Aleph. The Ramban quotes this Mishnah. It's in the Chiddushei Ramban on Daf Tes Amud Aleph. On Daf Tes Amud Aleph in the Gemara, just where the Gemara discusses, this line in the Mishnah. So the Ramban there discusses this Shaila as well. Ramban says, Ro'isi b'tosvos chachmei hatzorfasim zal. I have seen in the tosvos of the French chachamim shediktuku mikan, who proved from this Mishnah dekevon she'anu masiyin es ha'isha al pi gita, since we allow the woman in the Mishnah to remarry with her yet. Ve'ein matzrichen osa l'kaimo. We don't require her to authenticate the signatures. Elim ken yesh levorim, unless the husband comes and claims it's a forgery. But other than that, the get is good to go. Shmamina, we can prove from this Mishnah, shehamotzi shtar al chavero. Somebody pulls out a loan document against somebody else. Af api shehu nifrash l'bafanav, even though the defendant is not there. O shebali parman hayesomim, or the defendant is dead and I want to seize assets from his orphans. Or if the plaintiff is trying to seize assets from an unsuspecting purchaser who purchased assets from this borrower, we can prove from our Mishnah that lo tanyan lehu mezuyav. We don't claim maybe the document is forged. Ve'eino tzarch lekayim es shtaro. He doesn't have to prove that his shtar is authentic. Meaning, unlike Aratosis, which said so far, that there's a basic distinction between get and monetary documents. Get, we allow the get to go unchallenged, because mishum iguna akilu barabanan. But monetary documents, we say, hold on a second, you've got to bring in proof that these witnesses are valid, or else what's going to happen? It's going to be bedlam, it's going to be layhudim ha'yisar v'simcha, it's going to be a mess, right? It's not going to work, civilization won't last. That's Artosis's distinction between get and loan documents. The Ramban, however, quotes Tosfos Chachmei HaTzofatim, quotes some of the Balei Tosfos who say, no, get and shtar mamon are the same thing. The same way we see in our Mishnah, that when a get is brought from Eretz Yisrael to a woman, Beis Din allows it to go unchallenged. Why? Because the Gemara will say later on, a very famous Gemara, that min haTorah, the minute you have a shtar signed by witnesses, whether you recognize them or not, it's a good shtar. So the same way the Mishnah here says that a get is allowed to go unchallenged because min haTorah it's a good shtar, good, that's all we care about. So too says the Ramban, quoting Tosfos Chachmei HaTzofatim, shtar mamon also, you bring a loan document to Beis Din, you want to collect from a guy in absentia, you want to collect from the deceased guy's orphans, you want to collect from some unsuspecting purchaser who bought something from a borrower of yours according to this document, we let the document go unchallenged. It's got Adam, the fact that I recognize him, so what? You can collect on the basis of that document. Beis Din's not going to say, prove it first. That's a very critical shaila here. Right? If the Ramban's right, then those of us who are fortunate to come here tonight to the shir will, rake it in tomorrow. Just, go into Beis Din with a handwritten shtar signed by, whoever you want, or yourself, and just go when somebody's at work and get a Beis Din that, acts quickly, get his car, his Leichter, whatever, you'll do well for yourself. So that's a very critical shaila. However, the Ramban himself disagrees with this Tosfos Chachmei HaTzafatim. And what's interesting is the svar that he gives for the basis of his disagreements. He says, Hadin ain't okay. He says this is not true. He says, Bevadai certainly, kol hanifra shel befonav, anybody who tries to collect from a borrower who's not present to defend himself, umin hayorshin umelukuchos, or from heirs of a deceased individual, or from somebody who purchased property from a so-called borrower. Sarchu l'kayim shtaro. In fact, the Ramban says, like Aratosis, Basin will force the plaintiff to first authenticate the signatures on his document. Why? De'afuke mamona lo mafkinon. Because we will not extract property from somebody, assets or money from somebody, below shtar demekuyam, without a document that has been authenticated. Alright, what do you mean? In our Mishnah, we allow the get to go unchallenged. So why tell me we can't allow this loan document to go unchallenged? What's the difference?
One is hostile.
What? Yeah, the what?
One is hostile, one is not.
The
way we explain
hostile.
The we said the get is for. Have you heard it? For agunas, right? To prevent agunas.
Right.
So in this case, it's a non-hostile act versus, shtar.
So how do you define non-hostile act? What do you mean by non-hostile?
So in the case of the money, we're actually going to be hurting the other party by this.
Okay.
In the case of the get, we are actually, we are hurting, but we're not really hurting the woman by allowing her to get married.
Oh, so
once the get happens and we allow her to get married, it's not hostile. It's better for her.
Okay, so listen to how the Ramban says it. It's good. The Ramban says the following. He says, Zu eino doma lemishna seinu. The loan case is not parallel to our Mishnah's case. Here's the line. She'ein isha zu mamono shel ba'al. Allowing the woman to remarry on the basis of the get, which is essentially taking her from her husband and allowing her to go to somebody else. Ramban says, it's not the same as taking money from the yorshim of a deceased borrower. Why? Because the woman is not the property of her first husband. Ella bishus atzma hi lihinase. She is in control of herself when it comes to remarrying. Very interesting distinction here. Buy a loan document that I produce in Basin in an attempt to collect from somebody who's not available to offer a counterclaim. Basin will say, nope, sorry, you can't collect on the basis of this document unless you authenticate the signatures. Why? Because there, the Ramban says, I'm trying to take money from someone. I'm trying to take assets from someone else. Basin will not allow me to do so without a shtar that is mekuyam, which means without a shtar that has had its signatures authenticated. Masha Ankin says, the Ramban, and this is quoted by the Ran and his Chiddushim as well here, a woman who is looking to remarry on the basis of an unauthenticated get, there we allow her to get remarried. Because allowing the woman to remarry, says Ramban, is not the same as extracting money from somebody, because the woman is not the mamono shel ba'al. She doesn't belong to the first husband. She is in control of herself. And therefore, there's no need for requirement of kiyum haget here.
Even though he gets her maaseyada,
huh? Okay, that's an interesting question. I mean, meaning you're saying the husband will be losing money because what she brings into the marriage.
That's a trade-off.
And also, it's not, you're not taking maaseyada from him. It's a consequence of what we've done.
Right.
It's a consequence. Yeah, what are you saying?
She's not entitled to remarry. He said that because she's allowed to remarry on her own.
Bershus atzmahi lihinase. With regard to remarrying, she is in her own rishus. You're saying mitzad the iser shabo, she can't until she gets divorced.
Right.
That's true.
She seems
that's
like
true.
She can't get, I mean, it seems like she is more like a mom.
Well, again, she herself, says Ramban, with regard to can she remarry or not, is not, it's not a question of Mamono Shabbal. Now, you're right. If she's married somebody, so Chazar Masakin, that Maisi Adayim of the Isha go to the husband in exchange for him, Kakuna, right, has to redeem her, etc.
Well, what's the comparison here?
Yeah.
Money is obviously stationary. You know, I can't take something from Jeff. You know, his pen can't walk over to me on its own. That for sure can't happen. But, you know, like, you know, Busha and Isha, you know, there is, it's not the same, like a stationary object that belongs to someone. Even if you want to say there's Bahá'u'lláh, even if you want to say there's ownership and somehow, you know, monetary, whatever, it's not the same. There is a difference. I mean, it's what Ramban is pointing out. You know, there's a desire there. So.
Also, I mean, there's no guarantee that there's going to be any more. I say it now. You don't know. No. It's amorphous. What's going to be in the future?
Because right now, what's being changed is just herself being allowed to remarry. Okay. We're not taking mice down that she already gave him from him. It's just a future
streaming
stock option. I don't know.
Sure.
Right.
So the one called the Kenyan, the Gemara and the Kedushin, not really a Kenyan.
Meaning?
I mean, he's a nechness. Is that? As a Kenyan, he's acquiring the woman as a.
Oh, you're saying when we speak of Kedushin as a Kenyan. Okay, so you're saying so Kedushin obviously creates a Kenyan,
right.
But what the Ramban is saying is that doesn't mean it's a Kenyan mammon that she is, you know, mammon shabal. It's not that he doesn't own her like he owns his iPod. It's not the same thing.
Mishnah seems to put them all together.
I'm sorry?
Mishnah and Kedushin seem to put them one after the other.
Different types of kinyanim. Okay, so Ramban is close ended. The kinyan, the lashon of kinyan notwithstanding, a woman is not mamono shabal. So how are we explaining? We're explaining that what? That it's with regard to the woman is not his property, like assets are his property? What are we saying? What's the pshat here? How are we explaining it? Well, it's clear that Ramban is trying to say that because I'm not being motzi mamon shabal, therefore by a get, there's no need to be mekayim to get first. So we're explaining that by saying that what? That she's not mamon shabal because property he owns is his. Right? Woman is, it's a relationship, it's obligations, but it's not property that he owns. And therefore, since I am not taking property from his possession, there is no need for me to first prove the validity of the signatures on the get.
Is it because he owes her things, you know, in
return? I just, the relationship of husband to wife is not a relationship of husband to sheep. It's, I'm sorry for the bad comparison. It's not that I own my wife like I own my property. It's an obligation that entails, you know, mutual obligations between husband and wife. But it's not a asset owner relationship.
When you say in some ways it's more chomer, in a business situation it's just money. This could be real. This is much more religious implications.
Yeah, for sure. In many ways, it's much more significant than a monetary relationship. But I guess Ramban here is just saying that because it's not a monetary relationship,
we don't have to authenticate
the get first before we're allowed to remarry and leave that relationship. I should ain't buy money when I want to take money that belongs to a bailim already. Then I have to first authenticate the signatures on the shtar before I can do that. Now, the Briskarov in his Chedushi HaGriz on the Rambam, when he quotes the Chedushi HaRan that quotes this Ramban, he just throws in one phrase to explain what's happening here. He says that the Ran and the Ramban mean is that because Ein isha zu mamono shel ba'al, he says, therefore, the ba'alim, the ba'al is not a ba'al davar. He's not a ba'al davar. He's not a relevant party, so to speak. Because when I'm trying to take money from somebody, the money belongs to somebody, that person's a ba'al davar, that person's a relevant affected party. So then, Basin will say, well, if you're trying to impact somebody else who's a Baal Dover here also, you're bringing a loan document into Basin, which doesn't affect only you. It affects somebody else as well. You're not the only Baal Dover. There's another Baal Dover here. We have to advocate on his behalf also and ensure that you first prove the validity of this document before you go further with it. But, the Rish Rav will say, by a get that's brought without any authentication of the signatures on the get, because ein isha zu, mamono shel baal, the husband whose marriage she is trying to leave now, is not a baal davar. He's not a relevant party, so to speak. This is not between the isha and the husband. This is just a question of the isha and halacha, presumably. At the isha and herself. So the Beis Din then says, well, matar that gets kosher, we're not going to advocate on behalf of somebody else who's not a relevant party here and claim maybe it's forged, maybe it's not authentic. We'll say, you know, go right ahead and you can remarry. And so he just adds that the fact that ain't ishus of mamonos shabbal means that the husband is not a relevant party, he's not a baal davar, and therefore there's no need to authenticate the get before she can remarry.
I mean, it makes it worse.
So makes it worse?
Yeah. What do you mean it's not a baal davar? Of course the husband's a baal davar for the whole thing.
Obviously, on an emotional level, he's affected. Obviously, halakhic level, he's affected. But this shayla of can she remarry or not, I guess, is not
a fiscal balava.
It's completely focused on the mindset.
Whole life.
It's completely focused on the
monetary. Who the Ramban is?
Just the whole thing.
Then
right?
I get divorced.
It's just completely focused on the monetary aspects because. It's sort of bizarre, right? Because like you said, it's just money, right? But if she just comes in with this get and makes it up and goes out and remarries, then you have mamzerim, you have all sorts of issues, right?
Oh, so there's a lot of isser v'heter shalas here, 100%.
So, but this whole discussion just seems to be focused on the monetary aspects of it, right?
So you're saying the fact that there is not a monetary relationship here is what allows her to remarry. You're asking, what about all the issurim that are involved?
Right, it just doesn't seem to be on the table.
Okay, right, that's a very good point. So you're saying, the Ramban saying the fact that there's no monetary issue here between the husband and wife means that we can allow her to get married right away. The fact that all these Isurim are, you know, looming large over us apparently is not enough of a concern to make base and say, no, first you got to authenticate the get. That we're not worried about.
Well, the Isur is essentially on her.
True.
I mean, so in terms of whether or not from a perspective of whether or not she's coming up with a shamzuf or whatever it is, in fact, my is it, she wants to go around and do things that are going to create various, you know, isurim for her. So that's her issue.
That's good point.
The issue of the
ball. Good point. Right. That's the point. That's
her.
A good point. No, what you're saying is very good. You're saying that the fact that there's so many Isurim looming large over this situation here is not going to make Beis Din require her to authenticate the get. That's her Isur that she has to worry about. In fact, the Ramban in the very next line says, Odin, further he says, Shemitoch Chomer Shehechmarta Aleha Besofa, because we're so stringent with her, if she does in fact remarry and it turns out the get was a fraud, then she's going to be usher to both husbands because of Mamzerim, she's in real hot water then. Hey, kalta alav b'tchilasa. Therefore, we're a little more believing of her initially. So you're right. The issurim that are looming large here are between her and herself, or her and God, and therefore that's her responsibility to worry about. Now, his basic responsibility is to worry about those other relevant parties who are not here to speak up for themselves. So the Ramban says, well, if she's not mamono shel baal, there is no other relevant party who Basin has to advocate on behalf of. Masha Enkain, by a loan document, there is another person who's losing money that Basin has to claim, no, maybe this guy, you know, maybe this get is, this loan document is forged, you got to prove it first.
According to the Tosfos, the way they explain the difference between the get and mamon,
right.
It was a problem for civilization.
Right, Tosfos is working different svar here, right? Tosfos, right.
That svar, how does that work at all with this baal davar?
Oh, so you're saying our Tosfos doesn't mention anything about yes, mamono shabal, not mamono shabal. Loans are mamono shabal, they're not mamono shabal. Our Tosfos says it's
such an obvious fact.
By a get, it's mishum iguna, and by shtari mamon, it's just, you know, for the functioning of civilization. That's it.
Right.
Right, so what are you asking?
So the Grizz is only talking about.
The Grizz is saying pshat and Ramban, yeah.
So how do you work with that svara Tosfos then? Seems like it's just very easy for any lady just to come then and to forge her own thing. You say if you say it's not baal davar, but it still seems like it would have relevant results on any husband if any lady could just do that.
Well, I mean, even Tosfos agrees that a get can go unchallenged.
Right.
Tosfos is only worried about, you know, functioning of civilization when it comes to money.
Right.
Because again, that's what impacts other people.
Right, right.
It's the same. You still come back to the same idea. Right.
So what about the money aspects of it? About taking the ksuba, we say that.
Oh, that's a good question. What about the ksuba? What I when you divorce a wife when she remarries, so that the ksuba is then something the husband has to pay up. So why does the Ramban say that ain't ishus umemono shabal? What happens to the ksuba? The ksuba still is a relevant issue that you're taking from the husband.
Separate
so what
case.
Is it?
Separate case.
Meaning what is that? What?
The monetary case. Separate.
Right. Meaning it could very well be that you're right. Or else maybe we'll only allow the get to go on challenge as far as her remarriage is concerned. If she, you know what normally happens is a woman gets remarried and then she comes to the base and says, "Here's my get. I have to get my ksuba now." So maybe they say, "Great, you're married, enjoy." But as far as ksuba goes, now you got to get ki and my get. As we could treat it separately, we could say no ki and get required for remarriage. But you want to get some money out of this deal also, then bring in your ki and maidim.
That halacha? It'd be a strong proof that
that's. I'm just saying I don't know offhand if this is how the Ramban would pass, but I'm just saying that misvah would be a very likely way to go about it. Is that it's very simple. You can make that split very easily. That as far as your marriage is concerned, we'll say, you know, go for it. Ani shizimon shabal. As far as the ksuba is concerned, we'll say that you have to prove before you can collect on. Okay, so we'll leave it here for tonight. Next week, Emir to Hashem. I think there was still some stuff we didn't touch upon today in the email. Two Rambams that we can look at that also relate to this. To this Shaila, two Rambams that relate to the Shaila, and then I guess we can continue finish the Tosis. There's a lot more to discuss in this Tosis as well. Okay, so two Rambams in today's email, and the rest of this Tosis for next week.
Thank you very much.
Shikoa to everyone. Sorry.
Was the get she buys? Can't you quantify what it's going to cost to her? Because this could be mamzerim and so on, but it's